She's living in a world and it's on fire, filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away. Oh, she got both feet on the ground and she's burning it down. Oh, she got her head in the clouds and she's not backing down. This girl is on fire.
Thomas Paine podcast number 34, the Big Wednesday podcast. We got our own girl on fire here, Dr. Judy Mikovits, in an interview you will not hear anywhere else. And let me tell you something. Strangest convergence of events somehow produced an epic interview, and I'll explain that to you in a couple minutes. Dr. Fauci's back in the news as he loves the limelight. I'm not sure how much he's going to love it after this interview, because this is the Fauci interview to end all Fauci interviews. This is my third podcast with Dr. Judy Mikovits on it, and this one is the first two were epic, I thought, and the first one was groundbreaking because we were really the first podcast to have her on. I think we might have been the first people to interview her, because I remember after I interviewed Bobby Kennedy Jr., we followed up with Dr. Judy Mikovits, and her revelations about Dr. Fauci were groundbreaking, trailblazing, I would say, because very little at that time was known about Fauci, and that was a long time ago. And right when we thought we knew everything about Fauci that's come out, I catch Dr. Judy on a a nice California night, where she is coming fresh off of being censored by Sinclair Broadcasting. And I'm not going to bog down the show with the background of that. You can just Google Dr. Judy Mikovits and Sinclair Broadcasting and get the story on that. And then you can also read between the lines with some of the content, and fill in the blanks for the context when we're talking with each other here. And also joining her is Dr. Lori in different parts, who has been her publicist and handling her PR and coordinating the media and just about everything else. You're going to hear her voice at different parts. And I thought it was important to include her voice because they're a potent 1-2 punch together. And there's an old saying. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Before we start rolling. Because once I start rolling, I want to just roll. Because this thing is just fucking bang, 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 bang. And I want to, I don't want to lose momentum. So let me first say shout out to everybody on patreon.com/truepundit and Subscribestar.com/truepundit. They get to watch the video podcast of Pain in the Morning every weekday, along with the More Pain Show. We're coming off that just a few hours ago. We had another podcast this morning, Pain in the Morning, July 29th of the morning's news. And then this is the big podcast, number 34, the one we do every week, Big Wednesday. I named it after one of my favorite movies. If you haven't seen that movie, that is definitely worth watching. It's an old one. You can still find it somewhere on one of these streaming services, but I like Big Wednesday. It's always Big Wednesday around here. Big Tuesday, Big Wednesday. We have our own 1-2 punch. And so we appreciate the folks supporting us directly on those two platforms, patreon.com/truepundit and subscribestar.com/truepundit. We don't have millionaires and billionaires and the like supporting us and spreading their own and political and dogma and ideology through us. We are funded by you, and we try to report things straight down the middle as best as we can and give you the truth. That's where we're at. And I have to tell you, that support goes a long way. So we appreciate the direct support and the benefits we try to offer to our subscribers and good banter and chats that go on a daily basis on those platforms. I appreciate the input from folks there as well. Now, we got a little Alicia Keys to kick things off, and I can think of no better song with everything going on. We talk about the... We'll add a little bit more music here in the background as I build this up a little bit. This is like the woman power show. This is going to be very empowering to a lot of the ladies out there who listen. And I know we have a lot of female/women who listen to the Thomas Paine podcast, and we are grateful for their patronage as well. There's a saying, right? Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. And for those who know Dr. Judy's background, you understand that she has been scorned, and now she is on fire. As someone who's literally risen from the ashes, I'm sure you hear that tossed around prophetically a number of times in different instances, but she really has waited a long time for this. And the interview is something else, and I don't want to stand in the way. I don't want to get in the way of a woman who has a flamethrower. I'm not going to stand in her way with a glass of ice water. But this is my third interview with her, and this is everything I really wanted to strive for as a podcast, podcaster, broadcaster, however you want to term it. Something that's different. You can't find anywhere else. It's raw. It's got emotion, it's got an edge, it's got a punch, I call it a throat punch, maybe. It's got everything everything I'd wanted to do when I got into this, and to try to set myself apart from other folks in the media that are doing the similar medium, broadcasting, podcasting, so... As far as that goes, I'm happy with the way this turned out, but it's unfortunate. The circumstances are unfortunate, and just real quick, you're going to find out that one way or the other, whether it's through context of the interview or whether you do your own research, that Dr. Judy did an interview with Sinclair Broadcasting, and the media got a hold of it. They got their hooks into it, and also Sinclair backed off it. They backed off it, and they said that, according to her and her lawyer, Larry Klayman, they took her out of context and a lot of other things. Basically, the long and short of it is that they accused her of saying that Dr. Fauci manufactured COVID-19 in a lab so to speak. Like he's a mad scientist or a Dr. Jekyll or a Dr. Frankenstein working in the lab to create a virus and then spread it around. What she was actually saying is that, and you'll hear it from her. I just want to grease the skids here so you understand what's happening. Is that Fauci put the wheels in motion for COVID-19 with your tax money. It is perch in the government. Setting up manufacturing and researching in Wuhan, China. And also shipping samples of this over there. We said way back when this started that the idea that this was all on China was bullshit. Everybody was saying Chinese virus. And we're hearing from a lot of people in the government and intel that the U.S. has got a hand in this too. Well, now, and I said back then, it'll all come full circle. Now it has, and now it is, and now you understand. Now you see, and I called this 2 weeks ago. I said, Fauci and Trump are gonna spar this out in public because Fauci has been distanced to a certain degree, and he's not going to take it lightly. And the mainstream media obviously does not want this information out, what Judy Mikovits is saying, that the U.S. had a role through Fauci of setting up manufacturing and research in Wuhan, China. Not that Fauci was like a mad scientist in the lab doing it. She says that very emphatically, dropping a few F-bombs here and there. I mean, this is, you know, that song by Whip It by Devo. This is, she whips it and whips it good and whips him good. So that's just a little precursor. We'll cut to the interview and then I'll come back with some closing thoughts. I will say this though. I read the situation with Sinclair on Saturday night that she was censored and they were pulling the interview and all this stuff. And Sinclair's a pretty big network. I mean, it would be a feather in her cap for it to go out. And I was sitting at home. It was a Saturday evening, and I said, this is crazy. And I texted her. Basically, I said, what the fuck is going on? Not so many words, maybe. But, and she said, yeah, call me. Now. So I we did. We started a dialogue right away. And so I think I got her when she was, fresh. Off of this Sinclair situation, and it's just another obstacle, another mountain she has to climb or go around and trying to get her message out. And in speaking with her, I have to tell you, offline, online, she's a Hungarian woman. And when I say hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, a lot of people say that. Remember that Nancy Sinatra song, These Boots Are Made for Walking? Let me tell you about Hungarian women when you cross them. I'm married to a Hungarian woman. And we've been together 34 years. And you don't want to mess with Hungarians when you cross them. And I watched my wife's mother in action and my wife's grandmother who came over on the boat to Ellis Island from Hungary. Okay? And you do not want to cross a Hungarian woman, just from my perspective. And I got coming up on 35 years in this racket, watching these Hungarian women operate when you screw up and try to pull a fast one on them. And they are, I mean, maybe I'm just throwing a stereotype out there based on my history, but they are super bright. They see angles and schemes. You try to pull something over. It doesn't work. It might work for a little bit, but you don't want to mess with a Hungarian woman, in my experience. And I think this is a lesson that Dr. Fauci is learning. If he hasn't learned it yet, he's going to learn it after today's broadcast. So I'm just going to jump right into it. What you're going to hear is me basically checking in with these guys. her publicist, Dr. Lori, was out there with her Saturday night. And we go from there, and I'll be back. I guess we'll take a little break here. I have to put an ad marker in here. So we'll be back after the break. If the ad marker doesn't play, then that means that no digital ad was inputted. We don't handle that stuff. It's all done. It's really crazy. It's all done automatically. I don't like some of the ads you're playing. I don't know what ads are going to play. It's all done like in milliseconds. They bid for this stuff electronically. We don't have much say over that. I mean, I think most of the ads have been quality. So if you hear an ad, great. If you don't hear an ad, great. You're going to move right into the interview, and I think we'll go into the... Anyway, let's just let it rip and see where this goes. And then I'll see you on the back end. Hey.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
How's it going?
Do you go by Mike or Michael?
Either one.
Mike.
My wife calls me Michael when she's angry at me. So you can call me whatever you want.
Well, I'll call you Mike. I'm not angry at anybody.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah, you've been busy. You've been doing a lot of interviews, and I wanted to catch up with you. We talked about... off air, we talked about what happened with the Sinclair Broadcasting situation. What exactly happened with that? You said you kind of put words in your mouth.
It's actually very interesting because one of my friends from Frederick, Maryland, I've known her for 40 years since we were kids, just out of college. She texted me, I think it was like last Thursday night, and she said, "Hey, Judy, I just saw this on the network news, WJLA in Washington, D.C., or TJLA, the ABC station in Washington, D.C. I saw your name go across the bottom. So I walked in the living room and I watched it. And she said, and she quoted it. She said, you interrupted Eric Bolling, the interviewer, and you actually corrected him to say, no, I didn't say Tony Fauci engineered the virus. I said he funded the study, and the original monkey kidney cell line, VIRO-E6, came from the USAMRID, U.S. Army Research Institute of Infectious Disease laboratory in Frederick, Maryland. And so, and then she said the other woman got on, and Eric turned to her, and he said, "Do you agree with," and Larry Klayman, my attorney, was in this conversation. I was actually in his office only the second time I met him, and it maybe was the middle of June. So it's interesting because what was interesting about it is neither Dr. Lori was also there when we did this interview, because I had done another interview the same day that literally was 2 hours long. And got taken down literally within minutes of it going up that day. So Larry, then I did this interview with Larry, and I didn't even know Eric Bolling or who he was. I didn't know Sinclair. I just don't watch TV, never have.
Yeah.
So certainly not network news. I watch baseball, and now I can't do that anymore.
You can't even do that anymore.
Yeah, because everybody's in masks. It makes me sick. I mean, I wrote the book.
When you watch that, right? When you watch these guys on the sidelines or in the dugouts, I just shake my head. I say, "What are you doing? You spend all day together. What are you guys wearing masks for in the dugout?" It's
right. And so what my friend said is, she said, you know, and then she quoted that, and she said, so then this Dr. Sapir, I think it's Sapher, mm-hmm. It was a woman. And I don't remember what her first name is, but, and she said, you know, and this wasn't part of our interview. So Eric Bolling did something on this station that went live literally a week ago. And it was easily in June 17th when I talked to Larry, because we were working on the affidavit and the declaration that I made when we filed the lawsuit against, Newsom. I was one of the plaintiffs with Ben Stein in that class action lawsuit. So then she walked in the room and she heard this Dr. Sapir from Sloan Kettering. And she gets on there and he says, "So do you agree with Dr. Mikovits that that Tony Fauci, that Dr. Fauci engineered this virus. And she said, absolutely not. I don't believe in conspiracy theories or something like that. And my friend, I won't use her name, said, am I missing something? You two said, and then she went on to say, of course, funding a study is an engineering, almost verbatim what I said. And she's, Sloan Kettering, and she's, obviously funded by pharmaceutical companies, and she's got her own book, which just came out. And she's, lauded as some kind of legitimate doctor or scientist, and I'm a conspiracy theorist. And so everybody, so the next morning I came over to Dr. Lori's. She lives about 2 miles from me. And I live in one room because I have a, because I lost everything. So I have a very small apartment.
You're trying to rebuild.
Well, I can't actually rebuild. I can't actually. It's been a decade. I lost everything. We've moved 10 times in 5 years. So we're in a one room studio so that we can live on my husband's Social Security and his retirement, because I'm never going to make any money again. So I just leave that one room because, obviously this is a bit stressful.
You said, you didn't say that Fauci was in a lab manufacturing coronavirus. You said that he put the wheels in motion, and you previously said that he shipped the cell line to Wuhan.
Yes.
Yeah.
He did. Well, they shipped it. They said in the paper, and I quoted the Nature Medicine paper of 2015, and it's the same paper that I used in the interview at the Epoch Times. Which was, it came out, I think, April 8th with Joshua Phillips. And I gave that interview March 5th. So, this is well before all the lockdowns and the shutdowns. And what I was showing them was, no, when you fund a study, and they said in the material and methods, we got the cell line, that we mixed the bat tissues with from Fort Detrick, Maryland. And some other scientists have said to me since, they said, well, Judy, why is that Dr. Fauci, directing or doing something that's against the law when you can buy the Vero E6 cell line from ATCC, which is an American type tissue culture laboratories in Manassas, Virginia. That's where you store cell lines. When you publish cell lines that you grow things in, and when you develop cell lines, as I've done my whole life, that was the work I did in that facility with Vero E6. And they said, hey, well, that's not doing anything wrong because the Chinese the Wuhan lab could simply buy it from ATCC. And what I said was, well, then it would be clean. It wouldn't have been mixed with other bat tissues since, 2000 and at least 1997 and 8, because that's when I was working directly in that lab doing that work in my postdoctoral studies. That's what I do. So the point that makes it nefarious, or that it was calculated, was that why did you send the cell line from Fort Detrick, which was could, and nobody knows it wasn't contaminated with the XMRVs, which that the XMRVs was our discovery of 2009. And those were the cell lines that, how did you get HIV sequences, from monkeys? And this is what this Dr. Sapir said. Well, it goes through an intermediate host. And they went on to say, well, now they've got H1N1 and pig viruses and blah, blah, blah. And oh, no, that wouldn't accelerate evolution. They use the exact words that I've said for 3 months, accelerated evolution. No, it's not natural if you manufactured it in that cell line. And if you manufactured it in that cell line that came from Fort Detrick, it almost certainly was contaminated with other bat viruses, with the XMRVs, because that's what our work of 2011, when they shut me down, showed. So this is the thing, and people don't realize the twist. You know, absolutely, Tony Fauci knew this kind of work was illegal. So why didn't they buy the cell line from ATCC, which is maintained clean? You maintain the original cell line that had never been mixed with any bat tissues, with any other monkey viruses, with any other things that could have contaminated it and contributed to a strain, a new SARS coronavirus 2 that has the gain of function that it can infect B and T cells. And what I said in my statement to, you know, later on to Larry Klayman, as we were in my affidavit and declaration for that lawsuit against Sinclair or CNN, I will show you that affidavit. I will email it to you if you send me your email or text Lori your email. And it absolutely says those very same things. No, it's not the same just to get the cell lines. Cell lines can become contaminated in culture in only 2 weeks. There was a study published in 2013 after I was taken out of science by John Coffin, where he's like, oh, look, and this is chapter of our first book, Plague, yeah, where we call it the Immaculate Recombination.
I just got that book.
Because he showed how many variants. So look for the chapter, I don't remember which number it is, called The Immaculate Recombination. Okay. In only 2 weeks, and I'll also send you a slideshow I presented at Derek Enlander's in New York City in November of 2013, right before Thanksgiving. And this is the one Hillary Johnson discussed at the very end of the foreword. There was a scientist from NIH, a career scientist worker, who at the end said they find what they want to find, and they hate you with ME/CFS. They know. They've known, and this was so important because Harvey Alter's confirmation study saying, well, really, and we've got the quote in the talks I gave at the Truth About Cancer and others, and in this talk I gave in 2013. So in that quote, it said, you know, maybe it's correct to say there are many XMRVs. And our data in our original paper clearly showed that there were many XMRVs, and the XMRV VP62 infectious molecular clone that Abbott Labs held the patent with Bob Silverman and Joe DeRisi making lots of money, that clone was never in people. So when Tony Fauci stopped the validation study, because even though I was a fugitive from justice, arrested, that's why I couldn't go do the validation study. It said at Fort Detrick, as late as November 15th of 2016, when I went to Fort Detrick to the lab I worked in 22 years, and they stopped me at the guard shack and said, I'm sorry, Dr. Mikovits. They actually call me Dr. Judy because they play on my softball team. And they said, I'm sorry, we're going to have to detain you. And by the way, I can throw the first pitch and make the catcher's mitt probably as a perfect throw. So at any rate, I don't throw like a girl.
Somebody else does, we're talking about. Somebody else does.
I know. I hear you. So I took off my Washington Nationals championship hat after that day, by the way. I'll have to learn to forgive them.
Listen, what you just said plays into what you've told me in different conversations, that you said Fauci doesn't do his own dirty work. He ships things over to... And then he also said he puts research people in danger and may have cost lives, that kind of thing. Can you elaborate on that?
Oh, absolutely. So he doesn't go into those labs. He's never walked into the USAMRIID laboratory and put himself at risk. I'm a postdoc. I'm maybe 35 years old. I think I'm doing legitimate work to attenuate or weaken and a virus such that it can be used to study, to understand a pathogenic strain, the Zaire strain, and a non-pathogenic strain, the Reston strain. Well, why do you have a Reston strain of Ebola virus? What's in Reston, Virginia? What the hell are you doing? There's not a biosafety level 4. And so how, you know, and I didn't know it at the time. I'm 35. I just get my PhD. I'm doing work that I think is going to save humanity.
Yeah.
And as I said before, that in probably in our first talk, well, that Zaire strain was the strain that went to Ebola in 2014, you know, and killed 21,000 Liberians. And we as United States citizens, you know, Fauci stands next to then President Obama as the plane carrying the infected Dr. Kent, and, you know, who's barely survived that Ebola with hydroxychloroquine, and because the doctor there was smart enough to give him anti-malarial, so that and literally the doctor there, I know these people, they were in my church, you know, and so I knew the people that got infected, and here's them coming back, and they flew him over in this plane, and everybody's wearing suits. And I showed another slide of this, you know, as if they go to the CDC, and this is the summer or fall of 2014, and there's an NPR ad that I grabbed, a friend of mine grabbed a screenshot. I don't know how to do a screenshot, and sent it to me, and it was an NPR from December 1st, 2014, and I'll send you, that is in the Truth About Cancer slideshow. So it's, you know, and it says, here's a riddle for you. Why are they all in suits and wearing masks and gloves and things? And the CDC literally just redefined contagious. And they said, oh, measles go 6 feet. But this Ebola, this new, more pathogenic Zaire strain, because these people over there forgot how to cook their bats. I don't know. They did the same thing they were doing in Wuhan. Oh, it just ended up in a seafood market. Well, both Fort Detrick was shut down in 2014, and I did the culture in Vero monkey kidney cells and primary human macrophages. That's the abstract that I sent Larry, and that was included as evidence in my affidavit and declaration. Every word I'm saying comes straight from data. Tony Fauci doesn't go in a lab. I didn't work with Tony Fauci, and I made that very clear. He funded our studies. I sent them the grant. You know, he funds the studies, and he makes it possible so scientists can, you know, it would have been illegal to ship that cell line from that facility to Wuhan in 2015. It would have been illegal. So, you know, why didn't they order it from APCC if their motives were pure? And that's all we said. Well, you've got the building blocks and the contaminants and the XMRVs. And here's Tony Fauci now 2 weeks ago talking about oh, now there's a post-viral syndrome from SARS-CoV-2. And, and now they get ME/CFS. You've destroyed these people's lives for 30 years. And that's what I wrote on page 90 of Plague of Corruption, the email I wrote August 31st, 2011. You know, when they tried to say, publish this paper in Science, you know, and the blood supply, failure to confirm. No, the blood supply was contaminated. That paper that came out, oh, how interesting. It came out on September 22nd when I'm for, you know, when they threatened me on August 31st. You've got to get this to them because Science, the journal, is going to publish it in 2 weeks to coincide with the every other year IA, International Association of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome. It was planned to destroy the patient. And I said, it's impossible. I wasn't even in town, and I had IRB-protected data. I was home for Labor Day weekend, home. You know, I was taken out of this home in Ventura, California, our boat dock home, without any legal warrant. And here's felony fugitive from justice. It wasn't from Nevada. It wasn't from Ventura. It was from one of the federal agencies. Oh, the same federal agency that had that there in 2011 and 12, so I couldn't do the legitimate study. The same federal agency when Tony Fauci stopped the study when, against all odds, we would have found the association positive. But nothing about the study and any study that was ever done changed the fact that 6%, between 4% and 7% in every single study since our publication in 2009 found controls, found the healthy people, asymptomatic carriers, 6%, that's 25 million Americans. So when they had their little super secret phone call to unveil the results of the blinded study, it was what Frank calls the unholy trinity. It was Harold Varmus who came back, and this is in our book, Plague of Corruption. Why did he come back to the National Cancer Institute? Oh, to destroy Frank Rossetti. Oh, okay. Yeah, he did his job. You know, he went and took a $150,000 job to leave the National Cancer Institute in 2010 after John Coffin told Frank Rossetti, Science the Journal started this and Science the Journal is going to end it. And they started from the minute we found the blood supply, the validation study of Lasker Award winner Harvey Alter and Shai Shing Lo, where they did replicate our work. The blood supply is contaminated. Gary Owens, 1 month after our paper, he's a cardiologist researcher at the University of Virginia. At that meeting in the Cleveland Clinic, which is discussed in our first book, Plague, clearly, there were many strains, and he called it XMRV2, and the sequence analogy was all, or the homology was all right there. And John Coffin stood up at that meeting and said, "You can't call it that. You're not a phylogenist." Well, that virus wasn't named for phylogeny. It was named xenotropic because it was found in humans and not in mice and in a whole bunch of humans. 30 million Americans associated with aggressive, contagious prostate cancer. Spreads like that Ebola that came out of Fort Detrick in 2014 had contaminated the blood supply since the 90s, since the late 80s. That's where they got that box of samples, and it was non-HIV AIDS. And Tony Komaroff, the doctor, went back in New York City from Harvard, who reviewed our paper in May of 2009 and knew it was right and true, as they all did. It wasn't published till October. Everybody got those samples. Everybody knew there were many strains. Everybody knew XMRV was a nightmare. XMRVs were a nightmare to all of the world, and a liability. That's why Hillary Johnson's brilliant foreword, which I paid her $10 a word, and the contract said I couldn't change anything, and I did not. I did not even see it before it came out, and it's brilliant. And it says, a disease to affect the economy of nations. Absolutely. That was why Judy Mikovits had to go away and Frank Rossetti had to go away, because we knew and we were there. And this is what people don't realize. We were there the entire 40 years. And this doesn't happen in publications. This doesn't happen in science. Never do people get to see all of it. And it's a God thing, because people move on after 2 or 3 years. And I didn't. I never, Frank Rossetti and I have collaborated for 37 years, and they destroyed his life and his career as well. He left being a man who, the man who literally changed all of biology, the father of human, disease causing retrovirus. When John Coffin told him in 1975, don't bother looking for human retroviruses, they don't exist. HTLVs, HIV, we validated Luc Montagnier. So they destroy Luc Montagnier too when he said, oh yeah, these things have something to do with autism. You know, how many Nobel laureates get treated like dirt? How many people, Frank Rossetti discovered IL-2, IL-5, IL-15, showed the DNA methylation, trained me for 37 years. We made seminal discovery after seminal discovery, and we're slandered in that corrupt vaccine corps. You know, and Tony Fauci knows all of this, and he absolutely did, and he paid off everybody. Ian Lipkin was awarded a $34 million grant right after the September-October 2012 publication of this. They sat on the super secret phone call in 2012 while I'm held under criminal charges months after I prove my innocence. I'm forced into bankruptcy rather than come to the civil hearing and show my 97 witnesses. And who would that have included? Oh, Tony Fauci. Oh, Ian Lipkin. All of these people. Where are they now? They know COVID-19 is XMRV plus SARS-CoV-2 and HIV, and they will kill the original victim. And you better believe they can't cover this up. We have all the data. Read the last chapter of Plague of Corruption.
Well, speaking of Plague of Corruption, and you talked about going away and real shaky stuff happening, and you said
absolutely.
Well,
we were working on
something on Kan Taizhang.
Yeah, Kan Taizhang. Taizhang, yeah. We used to call him Tay.
Well, we'll talk about him. He was Fauci's right-hand man at NIAID, and they don't know what happened to him. He jumped off a parking garage. He shot himself in the chest at his desk. What exactly happened with him?
So I was in Frank Rossetti's office in early January, I believe it was 2013, when our colleague, the colleague who actually took my job when I left and came to California because I got married, and this is a lot nicer than there. And I wanted out of that corruption so bad. At any rate, she came in and said, you know, he was our friend, and Taizhang was, you know, dead, and that apparently he killed himself at his desk on a Sunday night. You know, and this is one of the times when Frank Rossetti had to literally sneak me on to the post, because the guards were stopping me. I was not allowed on an NIH facility, the one I worked for 22 years, because of this fugitive from justice charge. That, you know, so he would literally use his driver's license, and I didn't have to be identified in the car. And they didn't, you know, they've seen me for 30 years, so they didn't think about it. And so, at any rate, you know, he supposedly shot himself in the desk, in the chest. Well, in 2010, on December 22nd, Taizhang, who was the editor in chief of a journal called Retrovirology, published simultaneously 5 papers, not one of which passed peer review, and the people who peer reviewed them told Frank Rossetti, we're upset because no, that's crap, that's not real research. Sound like the hydroxychloroquine study, how they don't pass real peer review and all of a sudden they're in Nature and Science. Well, they published all 5 of them, and he overruled the peer reviewers, Taizhang, because together they told an important story, which was make this go away. You know, only literally weeks after the November 4th, 2010 meeting. So you, in September 7th of 2010 was the first and last XMRV workshop. I have all of the abstracts, and they were going to make that a totally negative study. And Annette Whittemore was upset. Obviously, I wasn't even invited. Frank Rossetti was invited to give the talk on XMRVs. And he's like, I don't do chronic fatigue research. This is her work. You know, the misogyny in all of this, you know, is insane. And anybody would be angry at all of this. You know, the women paying the price, the women who are injured. Oh, well, the virus is still allowed to stand in prostate cancer, but not chronic fatigue syndrome. They're just a bunch of crazy ladies. You know, this is, you know, Bobby Kennedy's brilliant forward. Now, again, that I didn't see, you know, in in plague of corruption. I mean, just, I didn't know half of this stuff that's been going on for these 40 years, because I'm just this focused kid who isolates viruses and immortalizes cell lines and tries to make drugs and diagnostics as a natural product chemist to heal these people. And that we can do. That we know right now. Type 1 interferons, hydroxychloroquine, Suramin, the very first anti-cancer drug. Suramin, the drug that Bob Navio did a small double-blind placebo-controlled study in 2015. So here in 2014, what was that plane doing as it took Dr. Kent to the CDC? Oh, how wonderful the CDC is. Oh, that just covered up William Thompson's testimony. That just covered up that we committed fraud. And we published a study to statistically make it go away, that if black boys are given MMR by the time they are 3 years old, before they are 3 years old, they have a 4.4-fold increased risk of developing autism, or worse, dying of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome.
Right, SIDS, yeah.
You know, and you can't call it SIDS if it's after they're a year old.
What do you think, so, real quick, do you think Jang?
Hey, Jang?
Do you think he figured out everything that you were saying?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So he's a good man. He was an honest scientist. We were devastated by that loss. And I think he realized the truth. And he wanted to do the right thing, just like Jeff Bradstreet, treat the people, use the serum, and use the GC map, the macrophage modulating factors. You know, these people died because they tried to help people. And I know it because, you know, they hunted me down. You know, I keep saying God has a sense of humor, but I escaped, you know, and that's the stories we tell. And we've taped hours like this. Thank God for Kent Eckwiley, because he's like, Judy, you know, you've got to do this. We take, he's an attorney. He interrogated everybody just as he would to find the truth, ask the right questions, get people to talk. He's got every one of them on tape. He's got every one of them transcribed. Why do you think they needed my emails? Why do you think, you know, I was told in 2013, you know, oh, they got OJ, didn't they? You know, oh, what was I arrested for? Stealing my own stuff? And stealing my own stuff, it wasn't even in my house. I didn't get away the night I escaped on October 17th with my stuff. I didn't get anything out of two offices that were locked down. My wedding pictures, my PhD thesis. You know, I didn't get one bit of my 40 years of work. And Frank Rossetti happened to have one of my little journals with Mickey Mouse on the front cover of it. And he brought it back to me when he was forced into retirement in 2013 or 14.
Well,
he was allowed.
Real quick, getting back to Jang. I think you've told me offline, you thought that he wasn't necessarily a suicide victim, but more of a suicided victim.
Oh, absolutely. I think he was suicided. Tae Jang had everything. Tae Jang was second in command at the NIAID. He was the editor of a journal. He did brilliant, honest research. You know, and he was the one that stood up and yelled at us at that meeting yelled at Frank at Leuven, Belgium, where Bob Gallo was also there and got up and walked out. He knew we knew the truth when Frank Rossetti showed the B-cell data. You know, and all of the clinical data. So Tae Jang, right then, he was fervent, stop wasting money. And I'd never seen him like that. And I'm sitting back there with Frank saying, whoa, what the fuck is this? And people cross the street rather than talk to us, people we've worked for forever. So the kinds of threats they put on our friends, the kinds of threats, you know, those are good people. And once you see the truth, so I'm sure. Between June, that was June 6th of 2011, when the serious, I call it waterboarding, you know, be started. And what they said to me is, come on, Judy, you know, and this is not Tony Fauci. Tony Fauci didn't intend any of these super secret meetings. He's just the puppet man behind the screen. You know, he's Oz that everybody's afraid of. Well, with $6 billion in the ability, the most powerful man, you know, at the HHS, who controls everything and has something on everybody. The only problem is he doesn't have anything on Judy Mikovits and Frank Rossetti, because we're so honest, we're boring. All we do is work 5 a.m. till 6 p.m. and go to baseball games. You know, this is us. And again, that's why I never get here. So yes, Heyjang, between June and 2013, you know, he played right along with all of it and making me go away as the editor of that journal. What happened? When did he figure it out? I don't know. I don't think we'll ever know. They told us there was a note at NIH and nobody was allowed to see it. You know, why not?
Wait, I mean, he left, you know, a suicide note, supposedly? You're talking about a suicide note?
Supposedly a suicide note. Same thing with Bruce Irvin's and the anthrax. He didn't kill himself. And they were friends of our family.
Yeah, you're painting a really disturbing picture here. I mean, this is probably what they... I know how these guys play. This is probably what they wanted to happen to you when they came after you.
This is why they wanted to kill me. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, they came after me, and they continued to do it. And that's what we described in the early chapters. In fact, scientists at sea, and that, you know, all of that happened before plague. I literally did not know until August 31st of 2014, Kent did not get Max, my student Max, on the phone until March of 2014. The book was in press, which we really couldn't change it. And that was the day I met Brian Hooker, one of my heroes, who dogged FOIA after FOIA after FOIA till he found the real data. They use statistics to bury the data. We never use statistics. Frank Rossetti says lies, damn lies, statistics. I never, ever in 40 years of research use statistics. You either have a virus or you don't. And we show it to you. And we did all of the right studies. One of the reviewers of our paper was a National Academy member, and he said it was the best description characterization ever of a new family of disease causing human retroviruses. Why did they make chronic fatigue syndrome go away? What they said to me in the summer of 2011 is, Judy, come on, it's not there. If it was there, AIDS patients would have it. And I said, no, they wouldn't. They'd be dead. Exhume them. I'll wait. So what did they do with COVID-19? Oh, lock everybody down. Don't let the families in to see how you're dying. They call it air hunger. It's the Lyme chapter, the Borrelia chapter. Not just retroviruses contaminating these vaccines. Borrelia, Babesia, little mold, little mycoplasma. Look at the chronic disease in our country. You're talking about...
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're talking about a culture of corruption at this place that ends up killing people one way or the other.
Absolutely. And it's been 30 years. That's why we wrote Plague of Corruption. That's why it's the title. That's why the movie Plandemic. You know, I didn't talk to Mickey Willis for 10 minutes. I told Mickey Willis exactly from memory. And I mean, that film to me was exactly how I remembered. I remembered AIDS patients, you know, throwing balloons at a Montreal baseball game at an AIDS meeting in Montreal, where I first published the presented. It wasn't even in press yet. The monocyte data, where I was told, oh, you're an idiot. Monocytes aren't infected by HIV. They don't have the CD4 receptor. So your monocyte cultures must be contaminated with T cells. And, you know, it's this contamination word and this anecdotal shit. It's been going on since the 80s. So the confirmation study by Harvey Alter, they got it from a block that said non-HIV AIDS, that there was no evidence of HIV, and it was the XMRV. So I said, exhume them. I'll wait. You can't take out the T and B cells and then take out XMRVs infect phosphate transporters, every cell of the body. That's why SARS-CoV-2 is the detonate switch. Who are they going to kill? Us. the lab workers they infected, the nurses, the doctors. Who's dying right now? No question people are dying. Why are they going to die? A mask? You can't suppress your CD4 T cells and create oxidative stress. If you wake up XMRVs and HIVs, you can't wear a mask. You can't get any shot anytime. And it's the whole story I'm painting. Oh, what happened in vaccine court in 2011? Oh, the Bruchowitz decision. Oh, that decision closed the loophole in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Act. And you can go watch the movie 1986, theact.com. And you can see that, that they closed that loophole in 2011 that says, even if they know about a manufacturing defect, what's the manufacturing defect? Oh, we can no longer grow any vaccines, antigens, viruses in animal cell lines. Where do you get coronavirus? Oh, every animal cell line, cow, pig, dog, flu vaccines, chicken, the dog one, the H1N1. You know, those been admitted in Rotatec. You know, there's an ACIP meeting, an advisory committee on immunization practices. I went there February 27th of, through 28th of 2019, the first and last one I'll ever go to. They barely let me in the door. They had the audience, the victims of their crimes, the people making comments about who's injured by these things and how much more of the injury. And, oh, I didn't win the lottery to speak. Oh, they had one yesterday to talk about COVID vaccines, and nobody won the lottery to speak except the shills that they've been paying, you know, for 30 or 40 years. So would you rather die? Would you rather lose everything you ever made and be living in a one-room apartment on social, your husband, your 82-year-old husband, who, by the way, who has COPD, I have XMRVs loaded with them. I can show you. I'm patient number 2623. The data are clear. You know, so they knew the lab workers are getting infected. No nosocomial transmission. Contagious cancer. Contagious AIDS. Spread exactly like SARS-CoV-2 in large water droplets. What do you do when you wear the mask? Oh, you concentrate that virus in yourself and you spread, you activate all of your viruses and you're spitting them right through those masks at somebody else. So they don't stop anything but the droplets. Who's committing all these crimes? Oh, Robert Redfield. Oh, he's the one that he and Deborah Birx are the ones that lied, committed fraud about a vaccine,
they did.
HIV vaccine's efficacy, and gave it to and gave it to the military. I have military after military after military person in the sequence data from 23andMe and said, hey, Judy, what's PNL43? And I'm like, it's an HIV plasmid. It's the envelope, the 5-4-5 prime of plasmid.
Well, you said while all this was happening when you were working, the one thing that I think we talked offline about this, the one thing that kind of freaked you out was the only thing Fauci was worried about was getting on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Oh, that's right. And you know, Fauci and Cliff Lane. Oh, here's Cliff Lane, the clinician, and he was back there in HIV, and he's one of the three authors with Fauci and Redfield on the New England Journal of Medicine, the paper that came out February 28th that said, oh, this isn't bad. This isn't anything at all. Oh, no, we don't need to lock everything down. Those three people writing that. They committed these crimes in Cliff Lane. They were all right there. Yeah, all I want to do is be famous. I'm going to get me one of them PhDs. You know, oh.
This is Fauci you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, all of them. That's what they did. And I'm a kid. I'm 23 years old. This man's yelling at me on the phone, you know, along with Bob Gallo, you know, and we know that an international incident, you know, this had to be decided between heads of states of France and Ronald Reagan, who discovered HIV. It was Luc Montagnier. He was the first isolation. And you know, they did kill millions. While, you know, Fauci carried out the little threat, And that little paper that they held up the publication of, that we were part of the team that confirmed it, and there were NAIAD researchers and NCI researchers on that paper. But, oh, poor Gallo and the buddy. I'm going to have to go pretty quickly.
Real quick, before you go, I want to just say, well, looking back and talking about the Tonight Show and things like that, and now you see Fauci's like some kind of a sex symbol or something. I saw him on the cover of another magazine. How does that make you feel? We'll close with that.
You know, I knew what kind of asshole that guy was. You know, this for me, it's like, you know, really, you know, that's just pure evil. I mean, it sickens me. It disgusts me. I'd literally probably vomit if I saw it. That's just pure evil. You could sit and let innocent black babies die, and all you had to do was wait until they were 3 years old to give them that shot, and the relative risk would go down more than threefold. That's just beyond comprehension. And I don't care if I ever see him again, but I did take off my baseball hat when he was sitting in the Washington Nationals, my lifelong team, along with the Detroit Tigers. You know, it's like, oh, okay. You know, really, this is America. Come on, folks. And why are you putting on a mask? And he's got his around the chin, and he already said it didn't work. You know, it just disgusts me. I mean, I have to say, I'd never want to kill anybody, but that's one obituary I would read with glee.
What would you say about parents now who are faced with the possibility of their kids have to wear a mask or a shield or both all day long in school?
Oh, absolutely don't. We just wrote a book, The Case Against the Mask, 10 Reasons Why Mask Use Should Be Limited. These kids have been inoculated. They've been injected with all of these viruses. They're going to compromise their immune system. They're going to spread the disease through the school. What I tell parents is please don't, and don't send them to the school. You can keep them somewhere else. You will kill your children.
Isn't there a higher risk for kids who have special needs as well? I mean, I've been reading that.
Absolutely. That all the vaccine injured, all the people like myself who they've infected over the last 30 years, we're the first to die. They have the lowest levels of glutathione. They have immune dysfunction already. They have acquired immune endocannabinoid deficiencies. They will die. That is the cytokine storm we published for the XMRVs in these kids in autism. I've been showing it at Autism One since 2010. It's very clear who's going to die with the mask or with any other shots in their life. And I think that's the intent. Burn the victims, cover up the crime, and the liability goes away.
When does this book come out on masks? It's like a lot of people would be interested in getting a hold of this book.
It's already out on Amazon. You can get it in paperback. I'll email you the electronic advanced reader copy when you send me your email, or to Dr. Lori. She'll text it to me, whatever your email is. I'll email all of these things to you, including that affidavit. But I have to run now and go see my other favorite lawyer, David.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks for spending the time again. It's always good to talk with you. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for understanding. I do appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
We'll keep talking.
All right.
You can call me tomorrow if you want, and I'll tell you more.
I'll call you every day. We'll just see how you're doing.
Okay. That sounds good, Mike.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, we kicked the show off with Alicia Keys, A Girl on Fire. Specifically, there were a lot of songs I was going to try to pick from. Let me see which ones we had. I added some to the Thomas Paine podcast playlist, like a girl power episode. Diana Ross, I'm Coming Out, Born to Be Wild, Steppenwolf. We got our motor running right on this interview, obviously. Shania Twain, Man, I Feel Like a Woman. And Joan Jett's Bad Reputation. We played that in the very beginning of the broadcast. The Girl on Fire lyrics, I looked at the lyrics. Yeah, I look at this stuff. I'm kind of like a geek, maybe a music geek. I look into this stuff to try to dovetail it with our content. Where's the lyrics? Let me pull them up here. She's living in a world and it's on fire, feeling the catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away. Oh,
She got both feet on the ground, and she's burning it down. Oh, she got her head in the clouds, and she's not backing down. That's what you just heard for the last hour. A girl literally on fire. You heard it from Dr. Mikovits. Fauci's already living his dream. He has his fame now that he's wanted. He's been seeking, he's been yearning for 40 years. He's the man now. That's what, according to her, he's wanted since the early 1980s. He wanted to be on the Johnny Carson show. Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Well, Johnny Carson's not around to see Fauci's incredible rise to fame and fortune. I'm sure it took the good doctor much longer to get to where he wanted to be than he believes it should have taken. But nonetheless, here he is. The question is, how many more people have to die so that Fauci can live out one of his dreams? Or how many people have died? I mean, Dr. Judy talks about allegations of suicided whistleblowers, potential whistleblowers, and Dr. Mikovits describes Fauci's former right-hand man, Dr. Jiang, who she believes was likely taken out. Are we seeing similar shades of the Clinton cartel playing out outside of politics, but this time in the medical, governmental community, fraternity, perhaps? Regardless, we're seeing a new dark level of corruption and intrigue in another government agency after government agency under the Health and Human Services umbrella, like the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, Fauci's NIAID. You also see the difference between a real whistleblower like Dr. Judy Mikovits and a fake one. And guess what? Fauci's still in charge of dictating policy in your life, in your home, on behalf of the White House. The real question is, what the hell is going on here? That I think a lot of people are asking themselves that. I know I have been. Fauci's sleight of hand for 40 years, as Dr. Mikovits put it. If you're a fan of House of Cards, the fictional TV series, famed TV series, this is literal. Seriously. This is a literal House of Cards. And when it comes crashing down, your life is in the crosshairs of what is going to be crushed. And I don't know what's going to come of this. And I don't do this often, but I would ask you to share this podcast with other people. Other similar-minded folks who are out there scratching their head trying to figure out what the hell is going on in this country. When guys like Fauci and Burks and Redfield are running point on the coronavirus task force, then hopefully those days are over, and hopefully interviews like this will help end that. And we'll follow up on True Pundit through the rest of the week and pull some stories out of here and blow a few things up, including, well, I won't tip my cap yet to give people a jump on us, but share this sucker. That's all I have to say. And powerful, blistering interview, I think. And we appreciate your support and your patronage and listening. And I was happy to score another great interview that we could bring to you and broaden your intellectual horizons on this COVID-19 scam. It's a scam. I've said that. If you listen to me on a regular basis, you understand that. I don't need to beat a dead horse on this. Again, I appreciate, we appreciate here, the Patreon, John. Subscribestar.com/TruePundit. Patreon.com/TruePundit. It's the same content, just two different platforms. If that's where you want to benefit us directly, that's where you do it. If you found something worthwhile in this broadcast and you feel like, hey, kicking in a few dollars, we're not supported again by millionaires and billionaires. We're supported by readers, viewers, literal, true, organic support. Ground level. Grassroots, not AstroTurf, not fake stuff, not pumping up our own content with purchasing ads and credit cards and things like that. We don't do that. So we will see you tomorrow again for Pain in the Morning. We appreciate the, if you didn't have a chance to check out Pain in the Morning earlier today, Wednesday, before we dropped this big Wednesday podcast, that episode is out. And we know you're busy and we appreciate the time you spent. Please share this. Get it out. We appreciate it. And as I say to, special thanks to Dr. Judy Mikovits and her publicist, Dr. Lori. And as I say, the end of every show, take care and God bless.
You know the bed feels warmer, sleeping here alone. You know I dream in color and do the things I want. You think you got the best of me, think you've had the last laugh, but you think that everything good is gone. Think you left me broken down, think that I'll come running back. Baby, you don't know me, cause you're dead wrong. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. What doesn't kill you makes you brighter. What steps even lighter, doesn't mean I'm over, cause you're gone. What doesn't kill you. Kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller. Doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. What doesn't kill you makes you brighter. Footsteps even lighter. Doesn't mean I'm over, cause you're gone. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, stronger. Just me, myself, and I. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Doesn't kill you, makes you